Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the News Gazette for Sunday, March 22nd, 2026. And obviously, the big news of the day on Sunday is the Illini's big win, making it to the Sweet 16 in March Madness. And the front page of the News Gazette has all basketball all the time. With the big story, we have a large photo here of Kylan Boswell driving to the basket in the first half of the game against VCU on Saturday. And I'm going to start with this story, basketball story, and we're going to probably have a few here in the first half, and then with sports, and I will cover some local and state news, and then in the second half we'll have obituaries and. Well, we'll see what happens from there. So here's our first story. We're going to look at the Sweet 16 from Saturday night. And I'll begin here. Kylan Boswell untucked his jersey as he made his way off court in the final minute of Saturday night's game against VCU, stopping what he was doing just long enough to pump up the crowd sitting behind the Illinois bench. Keaton Wagler repeated that gesture as he walked off the court behind his veteran teammate in the 5-for-5 line change substitution. The actual celebration 67 seconds later was equally as composed, the reality of a game that had been decided for a while. There's no rushing on the court and dogpiling at the logo when you turn a tight fit first half into a 76-55 rout by the final buzzer. Smiles were still etched on faces, hugs handed out from coaches to players, fans recognized for their support. Super Soakers were unleashed on Coach Brad Underwood in the locker room. A win certainly worth celebrating, but also the expectation. Illinois is chasing more and will get a shot at those loftier ambitions with a Sweet 16 showdown with Houston in Houston on Thursday. I'm glad this year with this team we managed to get there, Illinois center Tomaslav Ivicic said after watching his brother advance to the Sweet 16 with Arkansas last season, feeling like the Illini should have done the same. But nobody will satisfy themselves with that, Ivicic continued about reaching the Sweet 16. We didn't come for that. We know what's waiting for us. I just feel the team is aware of the stakes now. We want to hang out a little more. We want to practice more. We want to play more games. We don't feel like it's our time to go home. Illinois extended its season with a pair of dominant victories in South Carolina. The Illini crushed Penn by 35 in the first round before fending off a first-half rally by VCU to run away with a 21-point victory Saturday night. The Rams fell behind by double digits early in the first half before rallying to tie the game, a run Illinois expected after watching VCU do the same thing to North Carolina in the first round. The difference was the Illini had the answer the Tar Heels never discovered. Andre Stojakovic provided the momentum with his own personal 9-0 scoring run to end the first half. Then Illinois' depth of offense talent took over in the second half while the defense clamped down on the Rams. As much as we know what's at stake, we also understand we can't jump ahead, said Stojakovic, who scored a game-high 21 points. We can't jump the gun. We knew VCU was going to come to the game extremely aggressive. We knew they weren't going to let up. They had a great comeback in the first round. Even when we were up big in the second half, we couldn't let our foot off the gas because we know that teams in March, that's what they're going to do. They're never going to let up because their season was at stake just like ours was. Keeping that same mindset, keeping that aggression for 40 minutes is what we've preached pretty much since we lost to Wisconsin. That one-and-done experience in the Big Ten tournament stuck with Illinois, probably because it wasn't the first time a big lead vanished and a winnable game turned into a crushing loss. Wisconsin did it in the regular season, too. So did Michigan State and UCLA. Not letting VCU pull off a second come-from-behind upset, avoiding North Carolina's fate, was top of mind for the Illini. We wanted to make sure that wasn't us, Illinois forward Ben Humrichus said. Illinois outscored the Rams by 14 in the first in the second half to secure the win. Some of the adversity that we faced through the year, giving up big leads to end up losing, was a big piece of what prepared us for these moments. Humrichis continued, it's learning how to come together, learning how bitter those moments tasted when you lose a game when you know you should have won it. I think those moments prepared us. There were moments where Illinois slipped against VCU, missed shots and turnovers helped the Rams claw back from that initial first half deficit, but the Illini never lost confidence. It's something they've held on to throughout the season. I would say that when we are mentally locked in, when everyone is dialed in and focused for 40 minutes over the course of the game, that we're pretty scary, Illinois forward David Merkovic said. We always believed and always thought we're the best team in the country. We've got to have that mindset. Even after the bad losses we had, the two Wisconsin losses, the UCLA loss, we always thought we had the best team. Now we're just even better. Better might be what it takes to knock off Houston on Thursday in the Sweet 16, especially when you consider the Cougars will be playing so close to home. Like 2 miles between their own Fertitta Center and the Toyota Center, where the next 2 rounds of the NCAA tournament will take place. Houston crushed Texas A&M in its own second-round blowout Saturday, a 30-win team that now stands between Illinois and its ultimate goal. The Illini are still chasing that elusive national championship. It's why I came here, Underwood said. It's why I'm still doing it. That's everything that drives me. The first day, I feel like we can't win a national championship. They need to hire somebody else, or I need to retire. We're in that mix. And that's a story by Scott Ritchie. And I'm going to continue with some coverage of the women who played last night as well in their first round. And this is by Joe Voselli. He did a kind of a play-by-play as the game progressed. And the headline here on his story is, Inside the Arena, Illini move on to second round of NCAA tournament. And there's a nice picture here of the player of the teams warming up. And so Joe Voselli writes that he's in Nashville, Tennessee, leading the News Gazette coverage of the Illinois women's basketball team at the NCAA tournament. And we've got the final score, Illinois 66, Colorado 57. And he writes, the Illini have reached the second round of the NCAA tournament for a second straight year. And it was because Illinois freshman duo of Destiny Jackson and Sierra Parchment showed up and showed out at Memorial Gymnasium in Nashville, Tennessee. Again, it wasn't easy at all. There was nothing smooth about the way either team played offense tonight, but the Illini survive and advance, and the Buffaloes go home. That's the reality of March Madness, an Illinois win that sets up a second-round game with number 2 seed Vanderbilt on Monday, with the Illini eyeing a berth in the Sweet 16. The Commodores cruised to a 102-71 victory in Saturday's early first-round game of the four-team Nashville pod. Parchment led all scorers with 21 points plus 5 rebounds, and Jackson came up clutch in the fourth quarter with the 5'6" point guard delivering 11 of her 16 points in the final 10 minutes, while also producing 11 rebounds and 6 assists. And he does write throughout the game, he delivers a report on the women, and I'll read a little bit of that just to give you an idea of what was going on at the women's game. This is with 5:01 left in the fourth quarter. He writes, this has been Destiny Jackson's best stretch of basketball this game, right when the Illini needed it too. The freshman point guard has 7 points in the opening 4 minutes, 59 seconds of the quarter. Barry Wallace has been sold tonight with Illinois' leading scorer at 14 points. But if the Illini close this one out, it will be due in part, large part, to some special play from the freshman duo of Jackson and Sierra Parchment in their NCAA tournament debuts. And of course, we know that's what happened. So he does have a story here that takes you through the game with minutes left, and then in the final, it looks like at the end of the story here, he says the Illini courtsiders are in the building with about well, actually, I'm sorry, that is the beginning of his story. So I think that's about it for the women's coverage in their first game, and there will be certainly a lot more over the next few days. So I will continue here with Bob's buzzer beaters with the headline, "This Team is Out of This World." And of course, this is by Bob Asmussen, who's following the men's team. So let's begin with his column. "Hey, Mike Hopkins, good news. Your favorite college basketball team is heading your way. The former Illinois football player and longtime spaceman lives in Houston. Brad Underwood's guys earned a trip there for the Sweet 16 with an impressive 76-55 victory Saturday night against Virginia Commonwealth at Bon Secours Wellness Arena. So number 3 seed Illinois will play a game Thursday against number 2 Houston at the Toyota Center, home of the NBA's Rockets. The Cougars advanced with a blowout 88-57 victory Saturday against Texas A&M. We did a lot of good things, Brad Underwood told Brian Barnhart and Deion Thomas courtside just after the final buzzer. It's on to the next. It's team building. Hopefully we gain some confidence from this." Bob Asmussen has a numbered list here. Is it fair? Number one, is it fair that the Cougars, NCAA runners-up in 2025, get to play basically a home game in the regional semifinal? Perhaps not. But Illinois fans wouldn't have complained if their favorite team had landed at Chicago's United Center for the Midwest Regional. Underwood hopes the orange and blue turnout in Texas is as strong as it was in Greenville. They're the best. I hope they get to go to Houston. This is what you play for. Number two, Illinois' leading scorer, Keaton Wagler, was held without a basket in the first half and scored only 1 point. He hit his first field goal, a three-pointer, with 19:17 left in the game. Wagler, the Big Ten's top rookie, wasn't needed on a night his teammates stepped up, but he still wound up with 14 points. Number three, with Wagler off to a slow start, reserve Andrei Stojakovic came through big in the first half for Illinois. His dad Peja, a former NBA player, looked on as the younger Stojakovic had 16 points before the break. He hit 6 of 7 shots from the floor. Andrei finished with 21 points. "He showed his athleticism. He showed his toughness today," Underwood said. "I'm really proud of him." Stojakovic seems to be enjoying the ride, saying of the team chemistry during the post-game news conference, "I'll say this over and over again. We're even closer off the court. It just translated on the court. We trust each other. We love each other." Number four, most likely to make SportsCenter's top 10, Zvonimir Ivisic's one-handed second-half dunk, which our Rob Lacates photographed for the News Gazette, the News Gazette's instant cover. "That's the picture of pictures right there," Deion Thomas said on the postgame. "He's a freak athlete," Kylan Boswell said. In Thursday's opening round against Illinois, Penn didn't shoot its first free throw until late in the game. The trend continued Saturday against VCU, which didn't go to the line in the first half. VCU's first attempt came with 6:24 left in the game. "The Illini just don't foul. We did a really good job of not putting them on the foul line," Underwood said. "We talked a lot about that." Number six, during the pregame show on CBS, both Charles Barkley and Clark Kellogg picked Illinois to win. Kellogg pointed to Illinois' size advantage. Barkley said he was rooting for the Rams, but considered Illinois too good to pick against. And number seven, again, the A-team announcers worked the broadcast for CBS with Ian Eagle, Grant Hill, Bill Rafferty, and Tracy Wolfson on the call. After VCU won the opening tap, Rafferty used his signature man-to-man to describe Illinois' defense. Is Rafferty's answer to pick Dick Vitale's awesome? It is Rafferty's answer to Dick Vitale's awesome baby. In a first-half sideline interview, Underwood told Wolfson the Illinois defensive plan was on target. He seconded on that postgame, giving multiple shout-outs to assistant coach Cam Crocker. Our defense was stellar. Number eight, the Rams suffered a serious injury during during the early going when guard Nick Lewis hurt his ankle. He had to be helped off the court and was ruled out for the remainder of the game. Number 9, through half of the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, it looks like the selection committee nailed it. But I've got a huge beef with Missouri, the number 10 seed, being allowed to play number 7 Miami in neutral St. Louis. Totally unfair to the Hurricanes. I was there, and Missouri had a large edge in terms of crowd support. Of course, as I often say, the crowd doesn't play, and Miami won the game. That's two times this season I've seen the Tigers lose at the Enterprise Center following Illinois' 91-48 victory in December. Number 10. Nice to see Tom Izzo and Michigan State back in the Sweet 16. The Spartans are my pick to cut down the nets at Lucas Oil Stadium, and I've got them beating Michigan in the title game. The Wolverines also advanced Saturday, and that is the end of that. Bob Asmussen's report for today. And moving on here, let's not forget about basketball elsewhere. We have the headline here of Parkland. Men's basketball wins national title. And this is by Zach Pyatt. And we have plenty of pictures here of the Parkland men's team, and I will begin. A season that started in early November with a win ended with a win on Saturday night, except this victory by the Parkland men's basketball team ended in the NJCAA Division II National Championship game. The Cobras completed a storybook season with the program's second national title and first since 1986 for the community college that calls Champaign home, with a 76-68 victory against Ellsworth on Saturday night at Mary Miller Gym in Danville. Parkland, the 11th seed coming into Danville, completed 4 straight wins this week in Danville on Saturday night and finished the season with a 29-7 record. The win on Saturday night comes a year after the Cobras lost the NJCAA D2 National Championship game to finish national runner-up. Jaden Martin shined for the Cobras on Saturday night, pouring in a game-high 34 points. Martin, a 6'4" guard from Milwaukee, made 11 of 27 shots from the field and finished 11 of 13 at the free throw line. He added 8 rebounds. Champaign Central graduate Chris Bush joined him in double figures with 12 points, making all 6 of his free throws, and Grant Chamberlain also hit double figures with 11 points and 8 rebounds to complement Martin. And then we have a report here during the game, in the second half here, right towards the end, it says Parkland is less than 4 minutes away from a national title, with the Cobras leading Ellsworth 65-61. Jaden Martin, the Cobras' top scorer all season, has taken control and has Parkland's last 7 points. And we know that they came to victory there. And there's more of the report kind of throughout the quarters here in the News Gazette. And it looks like I'm going to move on and switch gears here a little bit to some more local headlines. And we have a shooting reported at Marketplace Mall in the Champaign Mall. This is just a quick roundup of what they know about that right now by Jeff D'Alessio. Police are on the scene of a reported shooting at Marketplace Mall. One victim is being treated after an incident that took place after 6 p.m. on Saturday. A large crowd initially gathered outside the main entrance of Dick's House of Sport as more police arrived on the scene. Champaign fire trucks blocked several entrances to Dick's wing of the mall. There was crime tape in front of Dick's blocking the entrance. There were more than a dozen law enforcement SUVs with lights flashing outside, and the mall has been closed to the public as an investigation continues, and I'm sure they'll have more on that on Monday. And I'm going to move on and hit some of the weekend stories here in the News Gazette. On the front page, we have a story by Jennifer Bailey. Oh, this is a weekend special story with the headline, A New Chapter in Ridge Farm. Remodeling gives historic Carnegie Library new life. I'll begin. A few years ago, the Elwood District Carnegie Library was in pretty bad shape and its future was uncertain. Jenny Solers, current president of the library's board, and her mother, Diane Dawson, who serves as treasurer, were among those tasked with saving the building. It hadn't been maintained in 50 years, Dawson said, adding that the only things that had been done included the ceilings in 2005 and some repairs to the roof in the 1970s. To tackle all the needed projects, repairs and modeling, remodeling started in December 2023. It's been gutted. The whole floor has been done. Just last year, we remodeled, Dawson said. The almost 20 projects they've completed in the last 2.5 years include new gutters, sanding, caulking, and painting the outside windows and doors, a concrete pad for the first outdoor flagpole, new sheeting and roof over the children's room, patching, sealing, and painting the walls of the children's room, a new south sidewalk, a new subfloor and carpet tiles in the main library, updating the internet wiring, and remodeling the main library with a new partial wall and relocating the bookshelves. They also restored and refinished the original front desk, stabilized the front concrete steps, resealed the stairs and side walls, and installed a new metal roof. This spring, they plan to repair the soffit on the north and east sides of the building. They also are trying to find a grant for their parking lot. Dawson said their new board consists of so many talented people, in addition to director Loretta Fagg, and they want to make sure the library continues to serve as a hub for the community. The library is on Illinois 1 at 104 North State Street in the center of the village of around 800. According to library board member and historian Jamie Robertson, the village was awarded an initial grant from the Andrew Carnegie Foundation in April 1909 in the amount of $9,000, which is about $300,000 today. The land it was built on was originally purchased in May 1909 from T.E. Smith. The five-room library was completed in 1910 for $12,000, which is about $400,000 today. It features solid oak woodwork with 14-foot long beams and large pillars on the exterior. Though Carnegie was a steel magnate who became one of the richest people in history, he grew up poor and spent a lot of time as a child in his local library. During the last 18 years of his life, he gave away almost 90% of his fortune, or about $350 million, which is about $7 billion today, to charities, foundations, and universities, including an initiative where he promised to build a library in any town that would provide a site and pledge to maintain the building. More than 2,500 were built between 1883 and 1929, and the one in Ridge Farm is one of the smallest still in operation. It serves residents of the village and nearby Elwood Township, Olivet, Vermilion Grove, Indianola, and other communities. According to Robertson, the village's original library was in the back of a jewelry store. Once it amassed more than 100 books, the ladies of the Chautauqua Literary and Scientific Circle realized they needed a bigger location, and member Anna C. Cole wrote to Carnegie about building one. The group played a major role in getting it built, including getting a tax levy passed to support it. The library today is warm and inviting. There are sections to rediscover an author with many new patrons, a new books section, an authors in Illinois area, a children's room, and a big selection of audiobooks and movies. Dawson said while the library only saw 20 or so patrons a month a few years ago, that monthly average is now near 150 patrons. Fagg has been phenomenal, Dawson said, adding that she's in the process of hiring a new assistant, and the board has been fantastic in getting things done. Everybody's taken the ball and run, she said. You couldn't ask for a better group of women. We all have our things that we love about the library, and so we're bringing it together. The library is open from noon to 6 p.m. Tuesdays, noon to 5 p.m. Wednesdays, noon to 7 on Fridays, and noon to 4 on Sundays. With Vermilion County's 200th anniversary and the United States' 250th anniversary this year, the library is working with the village on banners, exhibits, and activities as part of the celebration. The library celebrated its 215th anniversary last year. Some future programming being planned includes a tea party for children, euchre club, and movie nights. Dawson will also have a couple of summer programs for professional organizing. That's partially what she does for a living besides decorating. In addition, the library goes out in the community. A technology grant allowed them to buy headsets, and they're taking those and audiobooks and large print and other books to Ridge Farm residents, as well as to Chrisman and elsewhere, including nursing homes. So that's a delivery we offer for the community, Dawson said. It didn't hurt Chrisman. They don't have audio. The library is seeing use from about 10% of the population right now, she said, which is terrific. We've got a lot of things we're excited about, she said. And in more local news, I wanted to return to, we have some Champaign County Court stories here. We have one by Luke Taylor with the headline, Two Teens Charged in February Shooting, One to be Tried as Adult, Other as a Minor. And I'll begin. Two Champaign juveniles have been charged with firearms-related offenses. One was charged as an adult. Damone Turner, 17, was charged with one count of aggravated battery with a firearm and one count of attempted first-degree murder. He's being held in the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center, at least until Monday, when he will return to court for a hearing on his potential further detention until trial. A 16-year-old, whose name has not been released to the public since he is being charged as a minor, was charged with one count of possession of a stolen firearm and two counts of unlawful possession of a firearm. Champaign County Judge Chad Beckett ordered that he be detained in the juvenile detention center as well. All of these charges are a result of the Champaign Police Department's investigation into a shooting incident that occurred on February 18th at Stratford and Sheridan Drive. A 27-year-old victim was left with multiple gunshot wounds. Champaign detectives determined that the victim and Turner were communicating about cannabis sales immediately prior to the shooting. Turner was identified as the shooter. Search warrants were executed on Turner's social media, as well as the residence of the 16-year-old, a friend of Turner's. Photos in Turner's social media showed him and the 16-year-old holding firearms in that residence. Inside, investigators found two firearms, one of which had been reported stolen. Despite the arrests, the investigation remains ongoing. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact the Champaign Police Department or the Champaign County Crime Stoppers. And we have a shorter headline here on Election 2026 with a headline, Jet Still Leads in Executive Race, and this is by Yana Wiersema. About 400 more votes have come through for Sanford Hess as the Champaign County Clerk's Office continues to count mail-in ballots, but it's still not enough to close the gap between him and Michelle Jett in the race for county executive. The latest totals show that Jett remains in the lead with 10,846 votes. Hess has 7,215, giving him about 40% of the vote to her 60%. 29,101 ballots had been counted as of Friday afternoon, accounting for roughly 23% of the county's registered voters. The tallies include 9,606 vote-by-mail ballots. And here's a little postscript from Kathy Reiser's mailbag to end this first half. As she said, in her mailbag, a few weeks ago we answered a reader's question about what happens to the colorful and varied basketball shoes Illinois players have been wearing lately. And then Derek Berkson, a DIA spokesman, told us they can wear their basketball shoes that are provided to them and keep them as long as they're Nikes. And he sent a postscript addressing the second part of a question, which is, are there restrictions on what the players can do with the sneakers after they've worn them? And not once their career is over, and in the rapidly evolving name, image, and likeness landscape, that could eventually also apply to during their career. So they can't wear them after their career is over, I guess, their sneakers. Interesting fact. And I'm going to conclude the first half of the News Gazette for Sunday, March 22nd, and I will return shortly with the second half. And we will have obituaries and more sports and local and community news.